Hi, this is Jerry from SharePoint. This episode has been recorded remotely due to the COVID-19 restrictions and therefore may contain some technical glitches. We hope you'll bear with us until it's safe to return to our regular format of recording in the breweries. Until then, thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to SharePoint, where we tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host.
Today we're talking with Marcus Baskerville from Weathered Souls Brewing Company in San Antonio, Texas. Thanks for being on the show, Marcus.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, the craft beer industry is no stranger to supporting nationwide causes, from Sierra Nevada's Resilience IPA to support the victims of the wildfires in Northern California, to more recently other halves altogether supporting the hospitality industry with COVID. It seems that the craft beer industry always manages to come together. Tell us the story and the details behind your initiative, Black is Beautiful.
Yeah, so how the initiative started was basically me being a very proud Black man, a father of two children, and wanting to contribute somehow. I didn't participate in the local protests that originally happened. What was that? We were launched on June 1st, so like May 29th. I think May 28th was the date that that Saturday that those protests went on. And I was kind of disappointed in myself for not participating. So being said that, as a Black business owner, I said, well, how can I use my platform to make a difference? How can I use my platform to help? So from there, I basically started formulating a mission statement. From there, I was basically sending it to my brother, my cousin, a few different friends of mine, like, hey, what do you think? I'm thinking about brewing this beer. So originally it was just going to be a beer we were going to release in the tap room. I called on KD Designs, Kevin Dyer that did the label. I hit him up and was like, hey, I want to brew this beer. I want to do this label. And I told him, I was like, I basically want to highlight the different shades and colors, hues of Black. But outside of that, Kevin, I'm going to leave it up to you how you want to design the label. So he did an amazing job. So from there, I got the label, and I had sent it off to Jeffrey Stuffings at Jester King. And we were basically talking to about race relations over the weekend and, discussing Trump and numerous other things. And I sent them the label. And so from there, Jeff challenged me to turn it into a collaboration. So I took his advice. I told him, I was like, you know what? That's an outstanding idea. Not realizing how much work was going to go into it at the time. But we went ahead and I basically spent the entire night at that point trying to formulate an initiative. So I did look at the resilience. I looked at a lot of what Altogether did and how many people that got involved. And so it was a way for me to try to come up with a way to get involvement from the beer scene in a similar fashion. So basically I did take, the outline of the Altogether initiative, created a recipe, laid out the initiative, what was going on, what we expected from the initiative and what it was for. So dealing with the whole Black is Beautiful is to highlight the injustice and inequalities and issues that people of color, Black people are facing right now. And then what we ask from the breweries is to brew this, stout base, make it amazing as you can. And then, release it and donate 100% proceeds to local organizations, foundations that support police brutality reform and legal fees. And then also take the additional step to take it a step further within your brewery, your community, and start making changes locally, right? Because the beer is just one aspect of the whole entire cause and what's going on. And you don't want that message to get lost. So being said that, we want breweries to take into effect the long haul and try to push for equality and inclusion within their own surfaces and walls. So that's where the initiative took off. So originally we launched it, I think, June 1st. We don't do any type of marketing. We don't do any type of advertisement. And so this initial response has just been off of organic sharing. Other breweries sharing that they're doing the cause, people tagging their favorite breweries. So at this point, when I looked this morning, we were at 962 breweries. But it's been a humbling and amazing reception so far from the beer scene. And I can't say the craft beer scene anymore because even big beer is involving itself, like Golden Road, both Goose Island locations, Guinness. So, you know, some of the larger brands are starting to take notice and start wanting to participate too. So it's grown into this huge, huge thing that we never expected it for it to get this far.
Well, I think it's great. I mean, I know that here in Maryland, there's 16 breweries that are on your site. There's probably a few more, like you said, that kind of jump in or haven't said anything. But we've got some of our past guests like Hysteria Brewing and Milk House Brewery, Smoketown Brewing. They've all committed. And then I looked like you did, and I saw 962 breweries in all 50 states and 17 countries. All committed to brewing this Black is Beautiful. So you touched on it a little bit, but now this has really taken hold. Tell me what that kind of support means to you personally, and then what your hope is the result's going to be from this level of commitment.
Yeah, it's a very humbling experience for sure. Originally, when I talked to Kimberly and Mike about what I was going to expect, I think I told them that maybe we'd get around 200 breweries. So to, you know, surpass that by, you know, almost 400, well, actually over 400% is absolutely amazing. What it is for me is a humbling experience for sure, but what it does is prove to me what I already knew about the brewing industry, and that it's a very inclusive, and dealing with the whole type of initiative and everything. You look at the resilience, you look at the All Together initiative, and there's no other industry in the world where you've had 900 plus breweries participate in one cause, and especially for equality and, you know, inclusion for people of color, for Black people, for other demographics. I mean, that shit's crazy to me to have that many different businesses. Like, that's what we have to look at this as, is 900 plus businesses have entered the conversation of change in one industry. And you don't see that anywhere else. You can't name one other industry that's doing this right now. And so for me, it's just overall a humbling experience to see all these breweries want to participate in something and raise awareness. Now, with the long-term goal, obviously, is, you know, the beer is just one step of it. So the long-term goal is the overall change within your community, building dialogue, building conversation. If your brewery demographics aren't that great, implementing change within your own house, you know, trying to get people of color, minority, stuff like that, drinking your beer, even working there, you know, building that scene to start making change from the ground floor. And that's what the overall aspect of this initiative is starting making change from the ground floor.
Okay. You and I talked. I spent the last few years in Laredo, so I'm familiar with the largely Hispanic community that is there in San Antonio. So maybe talk a little bit about how they've kind of embraced this, or what the response has been to what you're doing.
So the response has been amazing so far. I mean, we obviously get those few messages like All Lives Matter and I won't support your brewery anymore. Well, we didn't want your support anyway, if that's the effect of how you feel, right? But overall with the response, I mean, you can see the people walking around in the background. It's kind of a media day to day. There's multiple media outlets here filming the canning process. You know, a lot of people have reached out just in support on how they can help, offering services, pictures, whatever the case may be, just to participate. And so, I mean, just locally, based off of everybody who shared the post, you know, wanted to tag us in all of the different posts regarding the initiative, the response has been amazing from everybody.
That's great. That's great. Now, you touched on this a little bit, but tell me a little bit more about what steps you feel that the craft beer industry needs to take to improve equality and inclusion for minorities, particularly in the long term.
Yeah. So what I think as far as inclusion is, dealing with the craft beer industry, the aspect of inclusion is already there. But what ends up happening is minorities, people of color, Black people typically get tiered because it's already been established that the community is mostly Caucasian white male. Mm-hmm. But as a Black man in the industry myself, I know that the industry could be very accepting. I mean, just looking at my mentors or the people that who put me on, who helped me with the brewery, even my business partner has been a mentor figure for me. And so for me, it's always been, okay, it's majority Caucasian, but you look at it and people are going to support you, make the beer, right? People are going to support you if you're a good person. So now it's the implement of trying to get these minorities within the industry within itself. And to do that, you know, I mean, it's on the breweries to make those experiences welcoming for them, right? And that's why this initiative is so important, because now you're putting the breweries at the forefront of these minority entities, foundations, communities, and different things like that. So now they're looking at, okay, these breweries aren't so bad. Okay, you know, we have people that are sitting here donating to our causes, donating to our support, and wanting for our message to be heard. And that's the first point of where to start. So now you're almost of a leader of sorts to your community, as far as getting this message out here for the people that aren't able to have a vocal aspect. So, you know, especially dealing with some of these more popular breweries that are participating. So we have the Russian Rivers and Trilliums and Perennial Side Projects, all of these breweries that are participating that have these mass amount of customers and followings. So now it's bringing to front that, hey, you know, we are supportive. You know, we are here for you, and hopefully this starts bringing on more conversation and dialogue between the communities to kind of conform and get together.
Okay. Well, that segues nicely into talk a little bit about what you see your role being, along with other minorities in the craft beer industry. What are your role to educate and inform so that there really is change?
I've been on that my entire brewing career. So from the time I started drinking beer, I was always on the, you know, you learn one, teach one type of aspect. Okay. So, you know, I, as a home brewer, we had the Brothers in Beer Club, which was basically like a homebrew, just drinking club, to where we went out and drink at other establishments, but we tried to get other minorities in on the craft beer scene. Mind you, this is like 2006, 2007. So I've been, you know, doing this for a long time, dealing with the whole aspect of my staff. We have a very minority staff. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be frank, Caucasians are the minority here in our brewery. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have a very minority staff here. I tend to, especially being a Black brewer that makes decent beer, I've been able to kind of get into some of these festivals, some of these events and different things like that, that typically you're not going to see my skin tone in. And so for that, that's opening doors for these other breweries, letting them know that they can get involved, that they can participate in all those different type of aspects as well. And so, you know, hopefully dealing with these breweries within themselves, they start seeing that and implementing these different programs. So, I mean, you have breweries like Tired Hands, for instance, that's had, you know, the internship for people of color, I think, for almost a year or two now. You've seen Fremont implement a similar program within their brewery, just based off of the initiative and stuff like that. And so it went pretty well so far. But for us, you know, it's just more so trying to praise the word, get it out, and kind of lead by example, if you say you will.
Well, let's learn a little bit more about Weathered Souls. You guys opened in 2016, so Your fourth anniversary is coming this fall in November. Talk about the name of the brewery and how you got started.
Yeah, so Weathered Souls is an ode to Mike's grandfather and father, more so dealing with the lives they lived and the careers to build them to be the people that they are. For my own personal thoughts, dealing with the name is more so dealing with all the things that I've been through in my young adult life, going from different businesses. I mean, I've been in cell phone business. I've been in banking for multiple years. You know, moving to a state where I didn't know anybody, moving to a city where I've never met anybody. So for me, that's more so where it lies. And then as far as how I got started, was obviously, you know, I got into beer about 2007, 2008-ish. My brother and cousin got me into the beer. So, you know, the whole learn one, teach one thing. So, hey, you know, we got introduced to this beer. You know, we're gonna start, you know, getting you into this type of aspect. Okay, let's see how it goes. Because I used to be a liquor drinker. I used to not drink beer at all. So outside of that, started drinking, visiting breweries, stuff like that. My brother got a homebrew kit, one of those Mr. Beer kits, for Christmas for my sister, and it was terrible. It came out horrible.
Isn't everybody's first home beer like that?
Right?
Everybody's first home beer is just terrible.
So it was one of those things, well, I could brew a better beer than you, right? And so we actually ended up brewing two beers together before I ended up moving to Texas. When I moved to Texas, I ended up basically spending some money on equipment because I wanted to take it a little more seriously since I was out here bored by myself. So within that line, basically started brewing some more, listening to Brewing Network, reading books, you know, that type of thing. So from there, I found myself starting to make some decent homebrew. Once I started making some decent homebrew, I started bringing them to local businesses, bars, you know, letting them try my beer, ended up winning a couple homebrew competitions, that type of stuff. So then I was like, okay, you know, I won my first competition. I think I might be all right to get in the, you know, you get start getting hyped over that whole thing. So I ended up getting a, this brewery let me do a tap takeover.
Okay.
And they noticed that the homebrew I had on tap ended up selling out faster than the beer that they had on tap.
Nice.
So they ended up hiring me as an assistant brewer. But within the lines of that, they basically wouldn't let you experiment, do anything that you wanted to do. It was here, you brew our core beers, that's what you're going to brew. Don't deviate away from this recipe. Don't add anything different or whatever the case may be. So needless to say, I did that once where basically it was a beer and I ended up adding, I think, quadruple the amount of adjuncts that they recommended. And I didn't say anything, just went ahead and added it. Told them after we kegged it off, hey, I did this. So they were pissed, but it's still to this day, and they've been open 6 years, their most talked about, highest selling beer that they've ever had.
Nice.
So kind of from there, I went ahead and decided I wasn't happy, right? And then at some point, the owner of the business got really disrespectful. So it was like, all right, I'm going to fight this dude in the parking lot or I'm going to have to leave. So I ended up quitting. And then from there, my current business partner, me and him used to go out and drink and talk, and we had became friends over the course of the years of me working for the brewery. So from there, one day I basically turned to him and was like, Mike, when are we going to open a brewery? And he turned to me and was like, I've been waiting for you to ask me that. And we literally started working on the business plan the next day.
Wow.
So it took us about, I think a little over a year, about a year and a half to go from, the fruition of the idea to opening. And then, yeah, so we'll be celebrating 4 years this year.
That's pretty good. Now, talk about how Jeff Stuffings from Jester King came into it, because I know you guys are pretty good friends, and, you know, you talk with him about a lot of things. You collaborate with them. You know, he's even a little bit of a mentor, I think. So tell me how that relationship blossomed.
So I actually used to be a really huge Jester King fan. And so when I moved to San Antonio, the first beer release that I went to was Atrial Batch 2. No, it was Batch 1. Atrial Batch 1. And I was one of the first people in line for the release. So at that point, you know, you're a home brewer, big fan of this brewery that's putting out amazing beer. So I was almost like a fanboy of them at first, bringing them my home brew, that type of stuff. So, you know, basically he would offer feedback, let me know what he thought of the beer. So from there, a few months later, it turned to, okay, well, now I'm thinking about opening a place. So Jeff was basically a huge help as far as us establishing. Originally, we were looking at being a brewery. He was the one that actually got us to go into the route of being a brew pub, and just any additional help we needed whatsoever from questions and anything in between, he was always open to assist. So from there, you know, once I opened, I'm no longer the fanboy. It's more of colleague type situation. And so he helped out a lot, and I've always still just messaged Jeff to ask him questions and different things like that. So the relationship kind of just went from a mentorship to actual friendship at this point. So yeah, we've done two beers together. I'll actually be going out there this Friday to participate in their Black is Beautiful beer, and me and the wife will out, hang out with them and all that good stuff. So dealing with the whole initiative and it turning into what it did, like I said, me and Jeff were kind of just having some text conversations, just general conversation about race relations and stuff like that, voicing our frustrations about what's going on. And, you know, we check on each other every so often. So I just went ahead and sent them that label. I don't have too many friends in the industry. I have, you know, Jeff, a couple of my local friends, and then a couple of my Sacramento friends, and then my boy Kyle in Hawaii. But outside of that, you know, I think I might have 10 people to like share beer related stuff with. And so he's one of them, and always been super supportive and great about that.
Cool. That's good. The Craft Brewers Conference was supposed to be in San Antonio this past April. Obviously, with COVID, that got canceled. Talk about how that impacted you guys.
I'm still pissed about it.
I'm not happy either.
No.
It's my chance to get back and visit the brewery again. I was like, come on.
Yeah, we had a lot of stuff planned for CBC. I had basically been working on CBC beers for about a year and a half, from barrel-aged stuff to collaboration. We had a lot of collaborations planned as far as people coming out that were supposed to come brew with us, hang out. We had a party with Hop Culture planned. We had a party with Tap Right planned. We had some releases from some amazing Mexican breweries that we ended up releasing beforehand just because CBC got canceled. I had some barrel-aged beers that we were going to drop that I was pretty excited about. So obviously it's a large financial hit that we took. Also being the fact that we were one of the more known breweries in San Antonio for CBC, you know, it kind of hurt as far as basically for me, this was going to be our red carpet to the rest of the world, right? For everybody to get introduced to us, know what we're putting out, the beer, everything like that. And so, yeah, I'm still hurting by it, but, you know, we'll get around it and do what we can. I basically be sprinkling these releases through over the last couple of months just to kind of start getting some of the stuff out there. But yeah, it was tough to see that canceled. But I mean, we look at the spikes in San Antonio and everything going on right now. So obviously it didn't need to happen.
Yeah, no. And that segues into, you know, I just heard, I think it was Friday, that the governor of Texas had recently imposed restrictions. So limiting breweries to carry out only. So talk a little bit about that step backwards. And then what the various stages are that you guys have gone through with COVID.
Yeah. So the San Antonio community has been pretty amazing about supporting our brewery during COVID. We basically moved to, you know, we were doing large distro pre-COVID. Our West Coast was in about 85 locations. It was outselling every IPA in the city 3-1. And so that's a huge hit when we were moving about 80 barrels to 100 barrels of West Coast in a month to only having, you know, what's on tap. So basically what we ended up doing was moving to a small batch format, releasing beers anywhere from 2 barrels to 7 barrels, different little fun stuff that we've been doing. We started a margarita series. We did brown bag lunches, which was a sour with peanut butter and different berries and graham crackers and a whole bunch of different little stouts. So those releases have been amazing. We've been selling out with anywhere between 2 to 5 minutes for each release, and people are supporting the whole cause of staying curbside, being understanding, that type of situation. So I probably couldn't ask for more dealing with how we've been treated during the whole COVID thing, because obviously every brewery is not operating in that fashion, but we've been pretty fortunate as far as what we've been able to do during the whole pandemic.
So it sounds like from what you're saying that, you know, again, less than ideal, but it sounds like the model that you've kind of adapted to is going to be enough to help sustain you.
Now, obviously we're taking a hit because again, we don't have that distro going out, but as far as taproom sales within the sales, they've actually been better than when the taproom was open. And you know, we've been able to put out a decent amount of beer dealing with so, you know, based off of that, I can't really complain. I mean, we got to hold on to all our employees. I think even at one point our bar staff got a bonus. You know, some people were able to work from home during the pandemic. I hired a new brewer during the pandemic. So, I mean, you know, we weren't hurting too bad.
That's great. That's great that you guys have been able to adapt that way. Well, I want to circle back to the Black is Beautiful beer and just have you share with our audience what exactly you hope that they take away from today's conversation and what you hope they do.
Dealing with the whole consumer thing, what I hope they take away from this conversation is the statement within itself is Black is beautiful, right? We look at the social injustices, the inequalities, and different things like that Black people face every day. I mean, I've even gone into the store and been looked at crazy by people just because I have a hoodie on and, you know, might be scruffed up from working all day or whatever the case may be. But, you know, I'm a 6'4", 230-pound Black man, so you can be intimidating to some people. So being said that, I just want people to understand that the message in itself, Black is beautiful, have understanding, have open dialogue, have open communication, and listen. You know, a lot of the things that Black people, minorities, and people of color are preaching is 100% true. I mean, we look at the history of America and the way things have gone, and I mean, in all honesty and to be frank, a lot of people are not educated on our history of Black America. I mean, mm-hmm. just from the fact from slavery ending and slavery going into Jim Crow, that most people don't know the prison system was created to basically a new way to enslave Black men because slaves weren't ready to give up, you know, the assistance that they had. So the government created a way to still have slaves. A lot of people don't know that, or mm-hmm. the fact that the police force was created to gather slaves during slavery. People don't know that. Or even dealing with the whole just Jim Crow, systematic racism, that trickling down to the so-called Black-on-Black crimes in Chicago and different things like that. All of this stuff has been systematically created. And, I mean, I don't mean to get all into the heavy aspect of it all, but people need to start listening. People need to start communicating, and people need to stop the buts, the whatabouts, and just listen to what people of color are saying. And hear what we're telling you, because there needs to be some change that needs to happen. And it should have happened hundreds of years ago. And it's sad that in 2020, this is a conversation that even needs to be had at this point. And we're having it, which is amazing in the sense that people are starting to listen. But this should have been done a long, long time ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I don't think you have to apologize at all for sharing. I think it's important. I mean, that's why I wanted to have you on and share your story. And I know that you've, you know, personally had, you know, instances in your life that, you know, you've talked about have influenced, you know, the real reason that you wanted to just do more. This is what I want to do. I want to, you know, present a platform. You know, we have people share their stories, and some people's stories are a little more light and, you know, whatever. And some people's stories are a little more real. And I think that's important because, like you said, if we don't start having conversations, then we're just going to get what we've had for the last several hundred years. And that's not good enough.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. Mm. So, again, I think the stout is a great idea. You know, it's, I've kind of come around on stouts. It's been very interesting. Stout really kind of wasn't my style. Before I moved to Laredo, I was in northern Minnesota. So I kind of like from Canada to Mexico made that really big change. And that cold weather up there, you kind of started to appreciate stouts a little better. But I'll be honest, I don't think I really embraced them until I got down that way. Couldn't find any, and then found you guys like right after you opened. And I was like, holy cow. I mean, you guys really know how to do stouts. And I think it's really a more approachable style than really IPAs, because people are particular about bitterness and hops and things. I mean, everybody wants to brew an IPA, but I really think a stout is probably a lot more approachable, and so many variations you can do. And you guys do it so well.
Exactly. I mean, you can get as creative as you want to with a stout. I mean, you figure we just did a blackcurrant cheesecake stout last week. We got the initiative coming, so it's just a base stout, a coffee and hazelnut stout, that type of situation. So, you know, the creativity stouts are always fun. And yeah, definitely. I think that people that are kind of new to the beer scene and stuff like that should kind of gauge more to those like fruited sours and stouts and like flavored stouts and stuff like that to start trying to get into the process of actually enjoying beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's great. Well, Marcus, I want to thank you for your time today. I hope that your Black is Beautiful initiative is not only successful, but successful in sparking conversation and change.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for having me.
You bet, man. I look forward to a time, hopefully in the near future, when I can get back to San Antonio.
Yeah.
And that way you and I can share a pint again in person.
Say, shoot me a message and we'll share a pint.
We'll do that. Appreciate it, Marcus. Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Share a Pint is released bi-weekly on Friday mornings and can be found at sharepintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint. Show notes for this episode are available at sharepintpodcast.com. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin McLeod and can be found online at incompetech.com. Share a Pint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at sharapintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@sharapintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Holla. Prost.